Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Revolution Radio. I'm broadcasting live from North Dakota this evening. It's a beautiful evening up here. And before our guests come on, I'd just like to introduce our show this evening and welcome everybody. I'm by myself tonight, so I'm going to be switching between a bunch of different screens. So if I've missed you saying hello, I want to say hello to you now. Hello to our listeners who will listen later. Hello to our troops, and God bless you, and thank you for all of your work for us and your bravery and patriotism. Tonight, we are extremely pleased to be talking with Commander Kirchner and Attorney Apuzzo about the eligibility issue. Now, last week, we had JBJD on, and we talked about election fraud and that angle of this very disturbing 2008 election and usurpation of our government. But tonight, we have the honor of talking with probably the two people who have done the most thorough research on the natural born citizen piece that is not focused on the birth certificate, because the birth certificate ultimately right now is irrelevant. If you have an ineligible candidate president because he of his father's citizenship, there you go. That's what it is. So the birth certificate issue is not the issue. And you know, we've all experienced this dumbing down of natural born citizen by the birth certificate issue. Now all of a sudden the leaks are out on Obama's home country being in Kenya. And, you know, what is the reaction? No one is immediately screaming for his arrest or anything like this. Opportunity to talk about this case, and in particular, I believe the Kushner v. Obama and Congress et al. Case will probably be the first one ever to be heard on the merits. Now, I'm going to check in the chat room here just a second. Good evening again. there we go. So, Brian, Frank, Mountain Goat, Poos, JY, hello, everybody. Thank you for coming this evening. Tonight as well, so I get a few things out of the way, because of the service commander, Kirchner and Poos are providing, they really are protecting our liberty. And I'd like to really see if anyone could get into their call this evening and give you a at the Terror Liberty site. I'm writing it in the chat now. ProtectOurLiberty.org. Sorry, my hands are taking time too. So it's www.ProtectOurLiberty.org. Please drop by and give them a generous contribution this evening. Okay. No callers on yet, so I'm going to just go over a couple of things. This case was filed at 3 o'clock in the morning on January 20th, 2009, and the timing of this case has meant everything to its progress this far. This is the time when the process, quote-unquote, had been completed, but before he had been sworn in. So as the president-elect, he still had the obligation to prove himself, and as a still also as somewhat of a private citizen, so he did as well. This also has prevented the defense from throwing up things like he did in the Berg case, which is, well, the process hasn't been completed yet, and nobody has gone all the way through this. So the process was done, and he still was required to do this. Oh, great. I think we have our guest. You all here for are saved from me. I believe that's right. If you are our guest this evening, please press 1 so I can unmute you, and there you go. Okay. All right. So now in this eligibility case, as you know, what has happened is Obama has put up a fake case that he's fighting. There's this case about fundamental eligibility, what our founders said, and he has completely ignored that issue, and our Department of Justice has ignored that issue and created another case called Standing and Jurisdiction. So you cannot refute these arguments right now. Let me see if these are our speakers. If you just hang on 1 second, let's go here. Hang on. Good evening. Oh, there we go. Good evening.
Good evening. This is Commander Kirchner.
Very good. Good evening. And we have another one on the line here.
I can hardly hear you. You're breaking up.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think it's my Skype line.
Oh,
is this better? Is this better?
Say again?
Is
yes.
This
mm-hmm.
better? Very good.
No, now you were better, then you broke up again.
Okay.
Now
okay.
Up.
All right. I assume everyone can hear you better. Yes, you are clear. Is Mr. Apuzzo.
I don't know. Attorney Apuzzo, I know he knows to call in at 9:10.
What is his area code?
let me look. I think it's 732, yes.
732. Okay, perfect. 732. He's not on quite yet. So it's just you and I. And Commander Kirchner, if I am breaking up, I'm going to turn this over to you. I was just describing the case where you are and making this a money bomb. So if you would like to go ahead and start, I will keep an eye out for Attorney Uzo, and I will try to work on my sound.
All right. Well, I don't have a speech planned or anything like that, but let me start out with the request for donations. People want to help the cause. We need help financially to keep the advertising going and the print media to keep educating the public about the constitutional Article II term natural born citizen and what it really means. And they can go to the website at www.protectourliberty.org. That's protectourliberty.org, and they can see all the ads that we've run in the last year. It's about 2.5 dozen full-page ads in the Washington Times, and I think they've had a tremendous effect in publishing Mario's essays and other matters. There's also a link there to a new summary of the 12 counts in the complaint that I filed a year and 3 months ago. And that's kind of a nice thing to click on and print out to have in front of you. It shows the 12 counts of charges against Obama, Congress, and the other five defendants. We keep forgetting that Congress is also a defendant in my lawsuit. And there's a Quo Warranto action in there, and there's many, many other counts of violation of due process, violation of equal protection under the law because McCain was investigated and Obama wasn't. If you read the 12 counts, you'll see why this case is much, much different than any other case that's been brought to the court prior to this, including the communist that was filed after the joint session of Congress when he was the illegal president-elect, but he was constitutionally confirmed by the Congress, illegally confirmed, but he was a president-elect, putative or de facto, and I sued before he was sworn in. So he was still, quote, a civilian, but he was obligated under the Constitution to be living up to the Constitution at that point. When he was not confirmed by Congress yet, he was still a candidate, and he could hide behind various laws. But as soon as he got confirmed by Congress, the onus was on him to prove he was eligible in that two-week period, and he didn't. And he accepted being sworn in, and he violated the oath he took that day. So.
Matter. I think we have Attorney Apuzzo on. Is that correct?
Yes. Hi, Dr. Kate. It's me, Mario Apuzzo. Good evening, Charlie.
Good evening. I was
evening.
Trying to tap dance a bit until you got here, Mario.
Thank you. And apparently I'm breaking up. Gentlemen, I'm just going to turn it over to you to discuss your case.
Yes, you are breaking up there for some reason.
So you just go ahead and I'll try to work on that. So thank you. Please go for it. Good evening and welcome.
Well, Mario, maybe you can tell them about the tentative news. We got the tentative news on the oral arguments, so that's the good news, right?
Yes.
What that means.
Well, this is what it means. I received a letter from the court, and it's from the clerk's office, and it sets down Tuesday, June 29th, 2010, in Newark, as a tentative date for a merits decision. Now, merits, it's a good thing that I just was reading my email. We got an email from JJ. He posts on the blog as JJ, and he wanted to know whether does merits mean the underlying merits? Now, underlying meaning is Obama eligible or not, and that goes to the question of whether he's adequately proven that he's a baby, you know, a person born in Hawaii, and of course the ultimate issue, whether he's a natural born citizen, which again it doesn't relate just to where he's born, but it goes to the definition of a natural born citizen, which we've said many times that it's a child born to two citizen parents, child born in the country.
Yeah, we'd want to hear his argument as to why he thinks that doesn't apply to him. That's what we'd want to hear.
Yeah.
Why does he think that not having two parents as citizens somehow makes him a natural born anyway. But that would be interesting to hear his argument.
Yes. Well, that the hope is that we will get to a court that will decide that
right.
You know, those merits. Now, the district court in Camden that decided our case dismissed the case not on the underlying merits, but on a threshold issue of jurisdiction, which is standing, and political question. So the only issues that are on appeal are those issues, standing and political question. So when we talk about the merits, we're talking about the merits of those issues, not the underlying merits to whether or not Obama is a natural-born citizen, just so that's clear. Okay, so you could have different merits. You know, you could have merits that are not necessarily the underlying merits, which is what is happening here. So on Tuesday, June the 29th, there's going to be this tentatively, the panel would decide the case tentatively. Now, I mean, they have a whole procedure how they do that. You know, just because that date is there doesn't mean they're going to render a decision on that particular day. Because then they go through this whole process where a judge is assigned the decision to write it. Then it's distributed, the draft decision, to the other judges. Each judge can write a concurring or a dissenting opinion. Then the decision, which is a draft decision, goes around to different judges, to the presiding judge. You know, they vote on it. They agree to it. Eventually, a decision is published. Now, the decision could be either presidential or non-presidential, which is important because when something is presidential, that means that a panel of the court cannot go against that presidential decision. Okay, so for example, we know that in the Third Circuit we have the case of Philip Berg, who everybody knows, an attorney who's filed the initial cases against Obama, although his only issue is whether or not Obama is born in America.
And he filed when Obama was a candidate, which makes a difference on rightness.
Yes. Yeah, that's all explained in my brief, my reply brief, where I set out why Berg's case is different from ours. But the point that I'm making is that Berg's case is a presidential decision. So if the appeals court felt that decision controlled our case, if it felt that way, okay, then it can't go against that decision. The only way you can go against that decision is if you have a in-bank proceeding, okay, which is basically the whole court.
But you argued in the briefs that the case is not presidential.
Exactly. No, it is presidential. Well, let's just clarify that. It is presidential.
But not relevant to our case.
Right. It's not controlling of our case, even though it is
right.
A precedent, you know, because the decision itself says presidential. Mm-hmm. Okay, so so that's the point.
Now what happens if they grant us oral arguments? I understand you go in there and argue our side, the other attorneys go in and argue their side, and I assume they'll be open to the public if there's oral arguments, right?
Yes, it's an open courtroom, open to the public.
All right, now supposing they don't schedule oral arguments and they just meet on the paper, is that still open to the public?
Well, you know, they're there, but they're not going to decide. I mean, they decide among themselves through emails, through telephone calls. They have conferences. It's not like they're out there in public deciding a case.
So if they don't do the oral arguments, it would be no purpose for people to fly into Newark to want to try to attend.
No, because, first of all, we really don't know what is going to be there, first of all. You know, they just, they'll come out.
I've had a person request to come in, fly in, if there is oral arguments. They want to be there.
Yeah.
But if there's not going to be oral arguments, there'd be no purpose, I understand, the way you're talking tonight, right?
Yeah, because first of all, you know, there could be really nothing that happens there. They just, you know, come out, they could just say a couple things, but then they, you know, they retire and they have to study the case. You know, they have a certain amount of time to study the briefs, to study the appendix. And the court tries to have a decision. You know, they have a goal of 60 days for drafting the opinion and writing. It's called an aspirational goal of the court. Unless the case is complex, then of course they have more time. But they try to have the judge, the authoring judge, transmit to the panel a draft opinion within 60 days after the assignment or after the close of any supplemental briefing on the case. And then there's a 45-day period to file a concurring or a dissenting opinion, you know, by one of, you know, one or two judges. So, you know, it's not something that on that day, you know, we're going to have a decision. It doesn't work that way. You know, they take their time. And, again, it depends on the complexity of the case and what they're studying and how they're conferencing the case and so on and so forth.
People have also asked me that if we do have oral arguments, you know, this isn't going to be like you see on TV. They're only going to give you like 15 minutes or 25 minutes to speak, right? The other side's going to get the same amount of time. They're not going to be a great debate going on for hours on the case.
It's funny you should say that, because in the early days, even in the Supreme Court, they had oral arguments that went on for days, for literally for days. Can you imagine? But those were the good old days, you know.
Yeah, Clarence Darrow or whatever.
Yeah, can you imagine, you know, for days, you know, you come back next day to continue oral argument. But, no, actually, the maximum, it's not really like a true maximum, but it's a maximum, is 20 minutes. The 20 minutes is the maximum. Now, if you want to get more than 20 minutes, then you have to have like four judges. Or I think it's a majority of the judges.
You wrote a letter asking for 25, so
yes.
They went to send it to a merit committee or something like that.
So they have to decide. But if you want more than that, then it has to go to a majority of the panel, a majority. Okay, when you only want up to 20 minutes, you just need one judge to give you that, just one. If one judge communicates to the panel that he or she wants oral argument, then you get it, okay? So that's the way it works. And I asked for 25, but of course I'll take 20, I'll take 15, I'll take 10. I mean, whatever they're willing to give us.
If you ask for 25 and it takes four judges to say, or three judges to say okay to that, or whatever, on a merit. Can one judge still ask and say, I want him to get 20?
Yes.
Or do you have to write it? Or do you have to write a separate letter and say, I want 20 because I didn't get 25?
No. I mean, you know, no. You know,
if they don't give you the 25, one judge could say, I want to hear his argument, give him 20.
That's right, yeah. Okay. Yeah, they have that kind of discretion. It's, you know, basically it's up to them, though.
Yeah.
And there's different reasons why they give your oral argument. Okay. Now, for example, you know, if you talk about the reasons when they don't give you oral argument, usually if the issue is like a really tight issue, something that's already been decided and it's not novel, and the brief covers it all, they'll say, "No, we don't need oral argument." Or if there's a decision of the Supreme Court or of that court itself that clearly controls the matter, and there's really nothing to argue about, they'll say no. Sometimes when you have appeals, somebody's arguing facts that were decided. You know, like you're saying, oh, the record doesn't support the facts. The jury, the instructions are weren't good, or the judge shouldn't have allowed certain evidence in. You know, they're kind of like factual issues or evidentiary issues, and the court can say, oh, well, you know, we can look at the record itself, and we don't need oral arguments. So those kind of situations. The court will not give you oral argument. Now, on the other side of that is, well, you know, when can you get oral argument? Well, of course, you know, if you have a very important issue, like, you know, public interest is involved, you know, you might get...
Article 2 of the Constitution.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You know, whether or not the President of the United States is surely an important public interest issue, I mean, that can't be denied. Although that alone will not control, because then you have to go into the things that I just said. You know, are there other cases, or is it already decided, or is the Supreme Court already made a decision on it? You know, that sort of thing. Okay.
Whether the court wants to hear it or not. I mean, if they want to hear this case, they can find a way to hear it.
Oh yeah.
Or rather, remand it. If they don't want it to be remanded, they'll find a way not to remand it.
Well, remanding is a different, that's a different question. That's if you win the case.
Yeah, you're right.
You meant to say, if they want oral argument.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
If they want oral argument, they can definitely do it. Even if a judge has some questions, just that alone right there, okay? You know, he wants to question counsel on a legal issue or a procedural point of some sort, whatever, okay? He has a question. They can ask for oral argument. Or
a person asked in the blog here, I'm reading it, and Dr. Kate, I guess, had problems with her voice, but somebody asked, okay, if you get oral arguments, what type of matters would you argue to the court? Like, I don't know if that's giving away strategy or you even want to answer that.
Well, no, I don't think I want to answer that. And it's not really giving away strategies, but I just don't want to answer that. I don't want
don't
to think
want to
that.
Argue.
I don't want to think that much.
Yeah, yeah, okay. You're gonna have to meditate and plan that long, you know, long and well before that instant when you have to get up there. So
yeah. I guess I should really say also don't want to give away. Going to focus on? I mean,
exactly.
you only have maybe like 20 minutes to do this,
mm-hmm.
and whatever you say is very important. You know.
And you don't want to give the other guy, the DOJ with their 10,000 lawyers and $1 billion, any hints.
Yeah, I mean, they've got enough advantage over us.
Right,
you know, like
exactly.
They got like 10 million lawyers and $10 billion, you know. And so they should at least give us a little bit of consideration here. And, let us do what we can here with our limited resources.
Dr. Kate is still stuck with her phone problem, so... I'm looking at the blog right here, so if anybody wants to ask Mario a question, I'll act sort of as a pseudo-host here and pass it on to Mario. Other than that, it's between you and me, Mario. We got to...
Sure. Well, go ahead, Charlie.
Here.
Why don't you, pick up on something that you want to, talk about, and then, we'll do the best we can here.
What I wanted to know is, if we have... When we have oral arguments that... Like, I can be sitting in the... I would could be sitting in with the audience, or would I be sitting... As a plaintiff at the alongside you, I mean, I wouldn't talk. I would just be. Where would I be sitting, say, if we had oral arguments?
Yeah, well,
I never sued anybody so I don't know. I'm not familiar with this stuff.
Yeah, well, I tell you, the oral arguments that I've been to, the part is, it's kind of
stay in the audience.
You stay in the audience, and the counsel are up at table there.
Okay.
Now that's different from when you're at a trial. When you're at a trial, of course, you're right there because you got to be able to communicate with your attorney if something goes on or something.
Mm-hmm.
But now I don't know, that there's a rule that you cannot sit at counsel table
mm-hmm.
because, what if you want to say something to your attorney? Okay, so
mm-hmm.
clearly in a trial you sit with your attorney clearly.
Mm-hmm.
Now whether in the Third Circuit. Whether you could sit there or not, I'm not going to say yes or no.
If we had oral arguments, I would want to attend, and I would sit where you tell me to sit.
Yeah, we would find, if you're allowed to be next to me, which my gut feeling is that you are, because you would have to be able to communicate with your attorney if something is said or if your attorney forgot something or who knows what. Of course, you don't want to disrupt what's going on there.
No. I wouldn't speak unless you asked me to say something.
when the attorney argues, he's up at the lectern, so it's not like you can be jumping up and down and running to your attorney.
I know nothing about this process because, I mean, I've never been in a federal court, and I'm sure 99% of the people listening haven't, so maybe the questions I'm asking is applicable to them.
Yeah. So when I'm sitting there, let's say the other attorney is arguing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that would be only if we have rebuttal. See, because first of all, we start the oral argument, okay? And then we have to reserve so much time for rebuttal, if you want to have rebuttal. So let's say they gave us 15 minutes, for example, okay? We would say, okay, 10 minutes, for our opening argument, and then we reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. So then you get your 10 minutes, then the other lawyer goes on, okay? And then you can use your last 5 minutes. So
mm-hmm.
there isn't really much time for a client to be able to really do anything. Let's say the other attorney said something and you still have rebuttal. The client could say, don't forget, blah, 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 whatever, So that sort of thing.
If you don't have oral arguments and it's just the paper, would you be there the day of them addressing that on paper in case
no,
they want to ask
no.
you something?
No,
nobody
no.
Nobody would be there. Just
no.
Them.
All you do is you just wait for a decision to come in the mail.
So it's like a conference, in a sense,
yeah.
they have.
And, and when I say in the mail, what I mean is on the Internet. In the old days, you know, you get it in the mail. You know, today, everything is done electronically. So basically what happened is you don't know when it's coming. You're waiting 1 week. You're waiting 2 weeks. You're waiting a month. You're waiting 2 months. You're waiting 3 months.
Right.
Okay? And then one day, all of a sudden, there's an email, okay, and you open it up, you click it, and it's the decision. And, boy, you talk about your heart starting to beat. Because then, naturally,
right.
that's the decision of the court.
Now, in the letter, the court asked all the attorneys to certify that they are registered with the bar or whatever is it that is the case or maybe.
Yes. You have to be
government lawyer. You know, you already are a member of that appeal bar, I imagine.
Yes, I am.
Been there. Yeah, because that was also asked of me. In reference to that letter, and I didn't know the answer, and I assumed you were because you've been a practicing attorney in federal civil lawsuits for 26 years, right?
Yeah, yeah. The answer is yes. The answer is yes.
But I didn't want to speak for you, so I didn't.
Yeah, well, the simple answer is yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
And,
so you're all set there. There's no problem.
No.
You've been to these appeals courts before, and I know you
yes.
told me that before you've been there. So we're all set. All the people out in the audience, we're all set. We're ready for oral arguments. As they say in the octagon, bring it on.
Yeah, you know, hopefully the court will see the importance. And I don't mean to, I'm not going to try to put the case around. How can I say it? Try to slide by on this because of the importance of the case. You know, anybody could always say, "Oh, the case is important." What I hope the court does is realize the issues that have been raised, that they are substantial mm-hmm. issues, and it's just not an open and shut thing. Because of course, the opposition,
they realize that the standing gates that they put up for the typical, one business suing another business kind of case. Shouldn't apply on a constitutional case like this where the citizen under the Ninth Amendment is saying, hey, my constitution, my contract with my government is being totally ignored. And all the charges, the 12 counts in my case, that I certainly have standing on at least one of them. I mean, the due process, the unequal protection, all the other issues. It isn't just me challenging Obama under Article 2. There's
yes.
many other actions in our case.
Yeah, well, we have a completely different case from Phil Berg, and again, that's not mm-hmm. a criticism of his case. He filed his case when he filed his case. He wanted to stop the
right.
The vote counting and different. He was Obama
right.
was still a candidate, and the whole situation is different.
We have Dick Cheney violating statutory law on how to conduct a joint session. That's a count in the case. So
yeah, of course that's not going to control the case, but what controls the case is the posture of the case. When did you file it? That's very important for standing.
Yep.
Very important. And
I can remember when the day I came to you and I expressed to you the urgency that we have to get this filed before he's sworn in.
Yes.
And we were
yes.
night and day for 3 days to get it done.
Yes, you're absolutely correct, Charlie, and I remember that. And we did. We literally did work night and day because we had a heck of a lot.
I felt that was going to be a key issue, and it turned out that exactly has been a major point.
Let's put it this way. I don't think you're going to find a book that tells you how to sue the president of the United States because he's not eligible
right.
to be president. You're not going to find that in a book.
Mm-hmm.
Judge Carter
in that case in California pointed that out in that case. Oh, you didn't file before he was sworn in, and he thought that was a major difference. And that's one of the key points of our case, Mario. We got it in before he was sworn in.
Yes, we did. It was, as well as I do, it was like, 2:50 in the morning? 2:50?
That's right.
Yeah, 2:50 in the morning. And that was a heck of a thing because... but before I pushed the button, we call that the button. I said, Charlie, it's all ready to go. I'm ready to push the button here.
We had a countdown. I remember 10, 9, 8, 9,
yeah. We actually counted it down.
I called you that Friday, the Friday before the inauguration day is when we first talked. I mean, it was a massive effort to get it done. I mean,
yes.
People don't realize I think I had a $500 phone bill that month before I got a toll-free line.
Oh, I believe it. And the emails went back and forth and the phone calls. I mean, my ear was sore for a month from the phone.
Yeah.
Mario?
But we're making progress. And if people don't, as far as this case, that we got a tentative hearing date of June 29th, I can remember in Berg's case last year, they stalled him from January to October for a hearing date. So I think we're making. I like to go faster. I wish it was over and he was out of office. But we're working with the system, the federal court system, and you probably know better than me. There's nothing slower than that, right?
Charlie.
Is somebody?
Charlie.
Hello.
This is Terry Dodd. This is Terry Dodd. Kate asked me to come on. I'm the host of Walls in Our Minds with Red Beckman. On Thursday nights.
Okay,
but I'll stop
talking. You take over, sir.
No, I don't want you to stop talking. I just wanted to try to get some of the questions out of the chat room for you guys.
Okay.
Everybody's confused about the issue of standing. They're wondering if you're having oral arguments, does that mean you have standing? At what point will you understand that you do have standing? And if you get the judge to agree that you have standing, does that send you back to a different court, or do you stay in this court?
No. No. The fact that you get oral argument does not mean you have standing. Okay. Again, the question you have to start with is, what issues are on appeal? What issues are before the court? Because you could have, 10 different things that happened or 20 different things that happened, but you only are before the court on certain issues which are being argued on appeal. Okay. So now, in our case, we have standing and political question. Those are the issues being argued on appeal. So if you get oral argument, you're going to argue on those issues. So you still have to argue about standing, and you still have to argue about political question. Okay? Again, that's not the underlying merits. The underlying merits is whether or not Obama is an Article II natural-born citizen and therefore qualified to be president and commander-in-chief of the United States. That's the underlying merits. But still, when we use the word merits, but we're going to the merits of standing or the merits of political question. So that's what's going to be discussed if there is oral argument. If there is no oral argument, that's what the court would decide on the papers, with the papers being the briefs. If the court reverses the district court, it'll remand. The remand is a legal word. It means to send it back down. So it'll send it back down to the district court because the district court said it had no jurisdiction. So when the court says it has no jurisdiction, that means that it can't do anything. So clearly it didn't do anything except say it didn't have jurisdiction. So it's got to go back down again so the district court can do something, which what does that do something is, have discovery and then have an eventual trial if you need a trial, or if somebody files a dispositive motion, which would be like a motion for summary judgment, the court can also dismiss or decide an issue based on a motion for summary judgment. So that's what would happen in this case.
So basically, they're going to decide whether I have standing or not at this court, and if they think I have standing or the judicial issue it doesn't affect this case, they'll remand it back to the district court, and the short story would be that we have a trial there to get discovery and have a trial. And there's a lot of loopholes and technicalities and fences
that
trip us up. But the simple question is, if we win in the appeals court, we go back and we start the process of a trial. Is that a short summary of it?
Yeah, and don't forget the political question issue also. It's not just standing.
Right.
Yeah, but assuming we win both those issues, then it goes back down again.
All right.
Is there really any such thing as standing, or is this just a tool that the courts are using to avoid having to entertain or to consider the real merits of this case?
It's an invention of the court. It's not in the Constitution.
It does not exist in the Constitution as a word, standing, but the court over its history has decided to create the concept of standing from Article 3, where it says that the court can only handle or decide a case or controversy. Those are the magic words, case or controversy. So out of those two words, the court, over time, created standing. If you look at the early decisions of the Supreme Court and of our courts, and everybody could sue. You didn't have to have standing. As long as you raised a legal question and you had a legal claim, you didn't even have to approve damages. You know, I mean, of course, once you get into the trial, if you have no damages, then you know, you get nothing. But maybe you'll get nominal damages. You know, just to be able to sue that somebody violated your rights was sufficient. And then again, you might not get any damages, because really that's what we're talking about here now. This new concept that has been developed over time. And now, when I say new, I'm talking about the newest way of standing is called injury in fact, because it changed over time. Like before injury in fact, it was a legal injury, like, you know, the law. They wanted you to show that the law was violated. And what's really contradictory is that when they created injury in fact, the court thought it was actually opening up the court to more people. Because before it was maybe like, you know, you could show an injury, but you couldn't show a legal right. So the courts were denying you standing because of that. So then the court said, oh, you know, now we're going to make it injury in fact. That should be easier for people. But it actually turned out to be in reverse. Because now, even though you have a legal right, a legal claim to an action, if you can't show that you have been personally injured, you personally, they call that a particularized injury, and it has to be a concrete and particularized injury, and then you can get tripped up on a causation and redressability. Okay, in other words, just because you've been injured and you have an injury doesn't mean that's the end of the game. You know, you still have to show that the court can give you a remedy, and that gets really complicated. If you read Judge Carter's decision in California, he gets heavy into that. That was the case with Orly Tates, and I think Gary Creep was in that also. But Judge Carter, he gets heavy into the redressability issue. So
now, when we get to the Supreme Court, though, since they created all these rules of standing, if we make a good enough argument in the brief, they could wipe away an obstacle and decide to take this case anyway, because they made those rules of standing, and they could say this case is different. We're going to take it.
Yes, and you know something, the most current standing actually has gotten a little bit better for litigants. You know, the court has really stretched a little bit on the concept, but the problem with standing is that it has a connection to the political environment. You know, if there's this a political need for the court to give standing, you know, it's been shown over history that the court will give you standing. Like, for example, during the civil rights movement.
Gotta
okay?
be a sexy case politically, something, a hot topic that they want to get involved in.
Yeah. So in other words, you know, the political climate during the civil rights movement was, open up the courts, let people come in and have their civil rights protected, even though, we're stretching a little bit because the discrimination occurred in California, but this guy here, he lives in New York. You know, so what's California? You know, he wasn't injured by what happened in California. Oh, we'll let it go anyway because it's important for the whole country type thing, okay? So they do it for civil rights. If you go back to the New Deal period, okay, where FDR was trying to get laws passed to address the economy. Now, they were unprecedented laws because they were impacting on private enterprise, okay, where he was giving the government control over so much. And the court initially was saying, you can't do that. That's unconstitutional. You know, and they were like knocking these things out. Then what happens is, you know, through political pressure, the court gets changed. You know, the composition of the court gets changed. And then when people are suing on those same laws, the court says, oh, no, you don't have standing. So what it did was it was able to protect the other political branches of the government, which was the president and Congress. But through standing, it was able to close the door of the courts, and people, corporations, you know, private interests, you know, they no longer had the court to go to fight these laws. And that was because of the political environment. And it happens also with environmental things, okay? Like, you know, at one time there was this, you know, because environmental, that's almost like religion. I mean, you know, I mean, I've seen people say that, you know, it's like almost like religion. And, you know, the court was saying, okay, well, we're going to give you, you know, environmental standing, you know. But then, you know, then they kind of like got away with it, you know, away from it because it was just going too much, you know. So that's, it goes back and forth.
Hey, Mario, can I ask you a question on venue? We started out, we filed in Newark. Then magically, that later that day, they switched us to Camden. Then now we're appealing in Philadelphia, and that's the seat of the Third Circuit. Yet they're going to have the panel's going to decide this tentative argument. They're going to have this tentative argument in Newark. So we're back in Newark again. What, if anything, do you think about this circle starting in Newark, going to Camden, to Philadelphia, and back to Newark? Why would they have the oral arguments in Newark?
I have no idea. That's an honest answer. I'm not just gonna make things up.
I was hoping it'd be in Philadelphia because after the case was argued, I was going to go out on the steps of the courthouse and point to Independence Hall and point to the Liberty Bell and have a little press conference there and say that's where the Constitution that I'm supporting and defending with my oath that I took as a 33-year member serving my military in the military for this country, point over to that's where it was written. That's where the Declaration of Independence was written. There's a Liberty Bell. It's got a crack in it, and Obama's making that crack bigger, and we're here to fight for our country to stop that crack from getting bigger.
That's
but
right.
Now they moved it to Newark. Now they moved me to Newark, so what can I point to in Newark?
Yeah, but more important, Charlie, than that, my hope why it was going to be in Philadelphia, I was going to get one of those nice Philly steak sandwiches. You know, a cheese steak sandwich?
True. You want Geno's? You want a Geno's? You got to then you're going to have to argue the legal argument which one is better, Geno's or the other guy across the street.
Mario?
Yes.
Mario, I know that you filed this case before Obama took his oath of office, and perhaps I'm not sure whether it was before or after the college votes were entered, but we're having a question about the importance of that and when exactly was it filed and what the significance of the timing of that was.
Okay, well, I'll give you just you know briefly my part, then I'm going to let Charlie add to it because I know Charlie, you know, he likes that beginning part there. But we filed before Obama was sworn in on January the 20th. He was sworn in January the 20th. We filed that morning, like 2:50 in the morning. Now, the reason why that's important is because standing is set from the moment you file your complaint. Okay, if you don't have standing,
not when you serve the papers on the guy, but when you file the case, right?
Yeah, when you file it, that's when you establish standing. Okay. And so why is that important? Because when we filed it, he was not the president of the United States. He was a private person. So as a private person, he has an obligation to prove that he's a natural-born citizen. I mean, that's self-evident. Okay, I can't understand how anybody, and the Obama supporters, they will swear up and down that me, Mario Puzo, doesn't know basic law because I don't know the burden of proof. Okay, that it's my burden to show that he was, you know, not born in Hawaii. It's my burden to show that he's not eligible. Okay, and I mean I see that all the time, and how they have the little jokes and things and all these sorts of things. Okay, but now the joke that I want to say is that you have to be literally out of your mind, okay, to believe that somebody running for president doesn't have the obligation to prove that they're a natural-born citizen, that they're eligible, okay? Even
well,
the certification.
It's the eligibility for any office. Any office in this country you run for, you must prove you're eligible first before you can be sworn in.
Absolutely. It is so self-evident. It's kindergarten. That's how self-evident it is, okay? Even the certification that they sign. Okay, Pelosi signed, and, you know, we know all that story, right? It says, and eligible for the office. You know, why would that be there if you didn't have an obligation, okay? And even look at the Pelosi's, not Pelosi, the congressman who's sponsoring the law there, Posey. I apologize to Congressman Posey. I was just
H.R. 1503.
Yeah.
H.R. 1503.
Right. Now, what does that proposed law say? Okay? It says that you got to show you're eligible.
It's making it it's going to make it a statutory requirement that he prove he's eligible rather than a constitutional
right.
requirement that's there already.
Yeah, so, I mean, okay, and then look at Representative Burgess in Arizona, okay? She's got a proposed bill. What does that say? It says, hey, you want to get on the ballot here? Show us your papers that you're eligible, okay? It's common sense. It's absolutely absurd, you know? So
once
that's
again,
why.
Once again, the politicians have violated common sense, so their answer is, oh, I'll get away with it. Then we'll make a law so it can't happen again.
Yeah, so that's why the standing is important, because he was a private person at that particular moment, and we sued at that moment. But here's what's more important. Well, I shouldn't say more important, but crucially important, is that we also sued him after he got sworn in. So now he's
after
the president.
After the joint session, when he became the president-elect, the political process had ended. So it was no longer an invasion of the courts to going into a political process in process. It had ended when he was confirmed, I think, illegally by the Congress. So the political process ended on that day, and then 2 weeks later he was sworn in. We sued in that constitutional period between the end of the political process and the time when he was sworn in, when he should have been qualified, and he wasn't.
Yes.
He should have,
And that's so important that Charlie says the end of the political process. What does that mean? Because
right.
if you sue him early in that political process, you have no chance because he's a candidate.
Well,
he's
that's what happened to Berg. You know, he was suing a candidate.
Yeah, well, not only him, but all the cases. Most of the cases mm-hmm. that were where he was sued, where we didn't have secretaries of states. When he was being sued, mm-hmm. he's a candidate, and a candidate, as strange as it might sound, under the First Amendment, you can run for office. You don't have to be a citizen. You don't have to be a whatever, okay? You don't have to be qualified. You could just run for office to make a political statement.
Well, it's the old classic example of Mickey Mouse being put on the ballot to be mayor of a city, being written in.
Yeah.
And Mickey Mouse has won already in some jurisdictions. Now, Mickey Mouse can't be seated.
Right.
And sworn in.
It's two different things. Running for office is one thing. Being seated is another. Okay, so we sued him after he ran for office, after the Electoral College, after Congress. So in other words, you can't argue that it's not ripe. See, not ripe means that you sued too early. You still had the Electoral College. You still had the Congress.
And it's interesting that the Obama lawyers used that defense every step of the way. Oh, he's just a candidate. He didn't win the election. Oh, he won the election, but he didn't get the Electoral College yet. Oh, he won the Electoral College, but he hasn't been approved by Congress yet. They used all these steps to throw out the cases.
Yeah.
Now, after he's sworn in, they say, oh, you should have did something before he was sworn in. Well, we did.
Right. And don't forget the case where
Judge Carter told Orly Tate out in California, you should have filed before he was sworn in.
Right.
So she said she did, but she didn't. He had a time stamp that she filed in the afternoon after he was sworn in. Our case isn't going to have that problem. We filed before he was sworn in, when he was a
right.
private citizen.
Yeah, and now, of course, the question for the Third Circuit is going to be, do they think that what we just said is important? You know, it's going to be their
That's
decision.
Right.
You know, whether that
Once
makes
again,
a difference.
Once again, is it sexy for the court to take a case to determine what Article 2 of the Constitution means in regards to natural born citizen? Is that sexy enough for him?
Yeah, and again, are our facts different enough?
Right.
Now, just on that, I mean, we have also other facts that are different from all the other cases. But just on that question that was asked about, you know, the importance of when we filed and what does that mean, you know, that's a very important factor on the question of
another,
standing.
Another defense the other guys used in other cases, well, you should have sued Congress, not Obama. Well, I sued Congress, so we got that base covered too. You see, so this case has a lot of loopholes and holes in the dikes plugged.
That's right. Yeah, we also sued Congress because, like Charlie said, even the courts, if you don't sue Congress, there's been decisions that they say, oh, well, Congress does that. That's their bailiwick, you know? And so we sued Congress because, Congress didn't do anything. You know, they had a constitutional obligation under the 20th Amendment.
And I had written dozens of letters to my congressmen and other congressmen and senators, and that's the reason I sued. They didn't even answer my letters. They didn't even answer them, not even a form letter.
Right.
What kind of a republic? What do we have? Well, we have an unresponsive. There was representation, no taxation without representation. Well, now we got taxation without responsive representation. They think they're the parliament down there, and Obama thinks he's King George. That's what's wrong with America now. They don't have to listen to the people. They don't even answer the people.
Mario?
Yes.
A question has been asked about your supplemental letter, and wondering if you could talk about that, you know, Ramsey Morris Collins.
Well, you know, that is an absolutely a tremendous piece of evidence. It really is. You're talking about 1789. I'm going by memory here. And Charlie, of course, correct
that's
me if
was,
I get...
That's when it was his dissertation was published in 1789. I think he wrote it a little before that, but that's when he published it, 1789.
Yeah, published in 1789. I couldn't tell you when he wrote it because I tried to find that, but, you know, if anybody else ever comes up with that, I would love to know that.
Well, it was written when the Constitution was being either written and or debated, you know, as far as ratification. It's right in that time frame.
Well, 1789... Okay, I mean, it probably even before all the states, you know, ratified it. But
right.
The point is this, that you have a major historian from the founding period. He was a physician. He was a medical doctor, but he was also a historian, a credible, highly respected historian who lived with the founders. He mixed with the founders. Okay, so you know
the delegate.
Yeah, he was a delegate. He was the president of the Continental Congress. He was a member of the Continental Congress. So he mixed with them. And before, you can bet your life, before he wrote something like that, he would have spoken to founders. He would have had his ears open. He would have known what goes on and what a natural born citizen was, citizenship was. Because the reason why he wrote that. Now, of course, you know, if people have been following this, there was the Congressman Smith, okay, who, you know, he ran for Congress and he beat Ramsey. It was three candidates. They had the election and he beat Ramsey, and Ramsey argued, before he wrote the dissertation, that Smith was not a citizen. Now, Smith was born. In South Carolina, I think it was South Carolina. Don't remember now what state it was, but Ramsey's from South Carolina, and he ran in South Carolina. But anyway, the argument was that he didn't come back early enough because what happened is when people were abroad and the revolution was going on, Americans expected people to come back and do your part. You're not going to just hide out in some safe corner of the earth.
Yeah,
okay.
He wasn't a loyal patriot. He wasn't a loyal patriot, and he wasn't therefore an original citizen. I guess is the bottom line on that, right?
Yeah. But the reason why he said that was because he didn't come back when he was told to come back because they told you what you had a certain time to come back, okay? And he went beyond that time because the war was still going on. In other words, there was still shooting going on. He figured, hey, mm-hmm. you know, I'm going to hang out in Europe. Now, you know, he was a student. He was going around, but still.
He was a sunshine patriot. He was a sunshine patriot.
Yeah, but, you know, he's looking at the war, you know, through the television. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And then Ramsey said, wait a minute. He says, how can you be a citizen? Because a citizen was somebody who adhered to the revolution. Okay, you have to adhere to it. You have to commit to it. You have to sacrifice either your life, your honor, or your money. Okay, which is what all the founders did. You know that was their sacrifice. And then you also have to take an oath. You have to take an oath. It wasn't just being a citizen automatically. Now the oath kind of passed later on. Like once the war was kind of cooled off, and then the years went by, they kind of did away with the oath. And even today, we don't have to take an oath. Unless you're going to be a naturalized citizen. Okay.
Just as listening to all this, though, not to get too much into those weeds, that prompted him to write a paper on citizenship and natural born citizenship.
Right.
And that's what's applicable to us today. In other words, the arguments back then was whether this Smith guy was an original citizen and therefore grandfathered.
Yes.
That's what that particular argument. But because of that argument and debate, David Ramsey, being the scholar and physician and historian, decided to write a paper on what citizenship is and what natural-born citizenship is. And that's the thing to find, and that's what you are saying is very, very important to our case.
Yeah, but
what
the
is it
thing,
about what he wrote? What is it about that he wrote that is important to our case?
Yeah, but the reason why I have to give the history of that is because Obama supporters, they tried to discredit Ramsey and say that he was politically motivated when he wrote his dissertation, because he was writing it against Smith, which he
right.
which he lost.
But you know that they'll
okay?
they'll spin anything. They'll spill. You could find the gold, the goose that lays the golden eggs tomorrow out here, and they'd say it's a chicken.
Well, of course,
I mean,
of course.
Those guys will spin anything. So I don't even they can go spin all they want, for as I
know. When you're dealing with a legal argument, you can't just you can't tell the court, oh, they're just spinning everything that they want to spin. I'm not going to address that. You know, you have to address arguments that are made. Okay, the court expects it. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So the reason why I'm sharing this with the audience is because I want the audience to be educated on these issues so that they can think about it and they can do research and then they can get on the blogs and they can comment about it and they can help the understanding that goes on in this process, okay? You're not going to win this by just, putting blinders on it and think you're going to win this
thing,
okay?
Yeah, I know, but that's a debate on the blogs. I'm talking about how important this dissertation will be to the court.
Well, I'm getting to that. I'm getting to that, okay? First, I'm giving the background on why he wrote the dissertation. Okay, so now that the audience has the background of it, now when he writes the dissertation, he defines what an original citizen is. Okay, somebody who either was born here or was here, adhered to revolution, gave an oath, and that part there applies to Smith. Okay, but then he goes beyond that. He says those were original citizens. Beyond that, then you have your natural born citizens. Okay, now the part about natural born citizens has absolutely nothing to do with Smith. So that's why this thing about him being biased or whatever is a red herring, okay? Because the definition of a natural-born citizen has absolutely nothing to do with Smith. Smith was just a citizen of the United States, just like the founding fathers, okay? The framers, our first presidents, eight or nine presidents were.
And just like Ramsey himself was an original citizen.
Right, exactly. Ramsey himself was not a natural-born citizen. He was just a citizen of the United States. And so then the importance of Ramsey is that he goes ahead and describes what a natural-born citizen is, and he says it is the children, the children of the citizens. Okay, first he says of the original citizens, but then later on he says of the citizens. In other words, it's not, you don't have to have a necessary connection to the original citizens. You could also descend from naturalized citizens, okay, which is basically most of the United States. If you do a population study.
So here is a founder of the nation who contemporaneously, in the time of the ratification of the Constitution,
When Obama was not running for office.
and a progressive didn't exist.
Right.
Here is a man who defines what a natural-born citizen is, and that deflates all the arguments that have been out there that some Swiss philosopher cooked this up out of the vapor air, and it doesn't apply to us over here in America, which is a crock. Because Vattel was the most read legal treatise of the time, and that's where they got the term, and Ramsey understood it, and he wrote it. He in a contemporaneous dissertation in 1789 was when the Constitution was finally was ratified at the end of 1788, and I guess Washington got sworn in early in 1789.
Yes.
Right by a founder of our nation telling us what a natural-born citizen is. So there's no way that they can wiggle out of this, so they have to come up with this cockamamie story about Smith,
you're going to love this. I have to share this with everybody. You're going to absolutely love this.
Right.
Okay, when they were having the debates in Congress and in letters to the newspapers and things, Smith defended himself, and you're not going to believe this. Okay, Smith defended himself. Smith said, "I'm a citizen." Well, how dare you say I'm not a citizen? You're never going to believe who Smith cited. Vattel. Vattel is cited by Smith. Smith tells.
And you have that in writing, Mario?
Yes, I do.
Great.
Yeah, Smith siphoned
that's
the
a
pelt.
New, that's a new tidbit. I didn't hear you write on that before.
It takes time
that,
to get Smith cites Vattel against Ramsey himself and says that Vattel, based on what Vattel wrote, that he's a citizen, and Smith cites Vattel. Now, is that absolutely amazing?
The Twitter judge is out of his mind. Oh, excuse me, I take that back. I apologize. And that Indiana judge that said some unknown Swiss philosopher named Vattel, the Indiana judge mentioned that when he decided that in a state court that Obama was a natural born citizen, that he kind of threw out Vattel as being an irrelevant Swiss philosopher.
Right.
I mean, what kind of judges do we have? I mean, that don't even know about the most preeminent scholar and legal treatise writer of the late 1700s and early 100 year period there. That was the most quoted piece of work in the United States. Here you've got Smith himself quoting it, and the whole world quoted Vattel.
Mario, you may find one judge or two judges that may not be familiar with Vattel, but you're not going to find the number of judges that have deliberately and willfully refused to hear the merits of this case that are not familiar with Vattel. There's just no way that these people don't understand that what Vattel was writing about was not something that he made up, but he was quoting the Law of Nations. When the Constitution refers to the Law of Nations, it's not talking about his book. It's talking about the body of law that was practiced and well known by the founders, called the Law of Nations.
Absolutely.
And that was based on natural law, and the Law of Nations was universal law based on natural law.
Absolutely. Correct.
Gentlemen, we have a question and we have a caller. The question was, what was the final resolution of the Ramsey situation?
When you say resolution of what? In reference to what?
Well,
between
Smith and Ramsey of the election, which on the original citizenship issue. In other words, was he an original citizen or wasn't he not?
What happened was it went to Congress, and Congress voted in favor of Smith. Favor of Smith. It was like 61 or 62 to only one congressman said no. And it's interesting that the Congress said that he was a citizen. Okay, did not say he's a natural born citizen. And Madison, I think it was Madison. He basically said that he did not agree with Ramsey on how you defined an original citizen, because basically Smith was born in the colonies, and Madison, okay, which is kind of surprising, because I agree with Ramsey. I agree with him. And if you study the history of this, Madison is wrong and Ramsey is right. You had to show your allegiance to that revolution. You couldn't sit there on some couch and watch television while people were shooting at each other, okay? And
but the bottom line is that what Smith won was that he was a citizen of the United States, not a natural born citizen.
Exactly. And basically, Madison said that he was born here, and that was enough. He was a student. He was going around. I think he was in England. Then he went to Geneva, Switzerland. He was moving around, and Madison basically said that because he was born here, he basically let him slide that he was a citizen. And now again, that's not applicable to after the Constitution. Okay, of course, anybody that was born in the colonies and adhered to the Revolution was a citizen. I mean, all the founding fathers, the first 8 or 9 presidents, they were all born in the colonies, and they adhered to the revolution. They were all citizens, okay? I mean, there's the whole bunch of them were all citizens of the United States. So Smith was no, there's no magic in Smith being declared a citizen by the Congress. That doesn't prove anything for Obama. That don't, because again, he's no different from the from the presidents and from most of the founders who were basically citizens of the United States. So the fact that somebody might want to use because I've seen that too. The Congress disagreed with Ramsey, that sort of thing, and so therefore he's full of hot air, that type of thing. But that's not what happened. That's not what happened.
What's going to matter is the appeals court. Are they going to accept that letter that you filed to try to get that Ramsey dissertation into the record, which you filed after all the other briefs have been done, and that was referred to the merits panel again or something like that?
Yeah, well, I can't tell you whether, you know, that's up for the court to decide.
But what do you think? I mean...
Well, what do you mean? It's allowed by the court rules. You can supplement
But are they going to require you to make a motion on it?
Well, that's already in the docket. So, you know, are you asking me that or somebody else ask you that? That's in the docket.
I'm asking you that.
It's right in the docket.
They're going to require you to make a motion. Is that?
They're not
going to. I read the docket, but I don't.
We're supplementing the appendix. Like, first of all, there is no appendix. Okay, because we didn't have a trial. There is no appendix. So we're going to make it into an appendix, so we can attach the articles to it. Because at this point, it's part of it's called a 28J letter. A 28J letter mm-hmm. you can bring to the attention of the court. Any kind of supplemental information that occurred after. You can even do it after oral arguments. You could do a 28J mm-hmm. letter, okay, which is what I did. Okay. And but if you want to make it part of the appendix, then you have to make a because the articles are attached to the 28J letter, okay, and there's no appendix. So we want to make an appendix, and I spoke to the court on this already. We're going to make an appendix, and they're going to be part of the appendix, and they're going to be the judges are going to actually have these articles, one of which is going to be Ramsey's article. They're going to have it in their hand, okay? So that's where the supplemental appendix comes in.
Well, I mean, this all came up so rapidly, we haven't had a chance to discuss it. That's why I was asking tonight, because I wanted to get clarified in my mind how that process worked.
Okay, no, because I was wondering, because it's right in the docket that...
Read that docket, and believe me, I don't understand everything I read in it every time I read it, and I must have read it 100 times since the case started, you know, the various entries. So, you know, that's off your, like, the back of your hand, you know, to you, but to lay people like me, it's not always clear. Hey, can I do a little bit of a money bomb thing here? We got to get the website out to get some donations, www.protectourliberty.org. I need funds to help do PR for the case and get print media out there and... especially when it's going to be even more important, we do get remanded and get back to trial, and we're really going to have to raise some money to get into the discovery and, you know, get investigators and all that other stuff going. But so www.protectourliberty.org, if you can give $10, $20, $100, or if you've got a lot of money, give $1,000. We need the help. And right there, there's also a link to the 12-count summary. That's a new document that's up there of the counts in their case. That's easy, nice to have. And a link to Mario's blog, which is puzo1.blogspot.com, where all of the briefs and essays that Mario's have written, and including one on the David Ramsey dissertation, is there. And it's puzo1.blogspot.com. So thank you for letting me do that little commercial interjection there to help the
Charles, I want to add something to what you're saying. First of all, this is not a private case. This case is being brought for the American people and for our republic. And I just have the highest respect for Mario Puzo, because you have been a class act from day one. You've been consistent. You have your filings have been very professional and without the kind of pitfalls that we've seen in some of the other filings, and I won't name names, but I just want to say that if I was going to contribute to any of these cases, it would be this case. And I just would like to encourage everyone out there, as Charles Kirshner has invited you, to go to that website that Kate has posted in chat, and make whatever contribute whatever you can.
We appreciate that, and I highly appreciate that.
Okay, well, we're ready for another question. Anybody
on
the phone?
Whoever was on there before apparently went away. I don't believe we have any other callers on mic right now. There's several people listening, but I don't think anybody's ready to ask a question on it. If anyone in our chat room would like to put a question on the board or call in, please do so. Mario, my question is, what do you perceive that the decision of this court is hinging on right now? What do you see as the most important issue that you believe the judge has to be convinced of?
Well, you know, that's a really excellent question, and you know, this is a guessing game. It really is. But here's my approach to this case. Now, we've seen all the cases die because of standing, okay? And you know, I believe that even though when you deal with standing, you don't necessarily touch the merits, but I don't see how a court can decide the question of standing without looking at the merits, okay? I mean, you know, that sounds kind of like weird, like contradictory, but my common sense tells me that. Because how can I say whether you've been injured unless I know what the merits are of your claim, okay? So in this case, what is the merit? The merit is that Mr. Obama is not a natural-born citizen. Okay, now what does that mean? What does that mean? That means that according to our founding fathers, we're at risk. That's what it means, okay? And you know, they talked about this, foreign influence. We have somebody we don't even know who he is, okay? That's okay. That creates the injury. So the merits creates the injury, because the injury is.
I don't trust the man. I have no trust in Mr. Obama. I don't know who his legal identity is, and I took an oath to support and defend the Constitution. This man is a threat to our country.
Yeah. Now, Charlie, without you getting into much of the tales or anything like that, okay? Because I mean, I don't want to have a trial here on the radio, okay?
Right.
But basically, what I'm saying is that you know my clients and Charlie is one of them, okay? They have to know who the president is. Why? Because the Constitution says he's got to be a natural born citizen. Why? Because if he's not a natural born citizen, we can't trust him. We don't know who he is. Okay? He could be a domestic enemy. He could be anybody. Okay?
If a person is born with dual allegiance, he has foreign influence on him at birth.
Yeah. So that's really the crux of the standing is that me citizen X, okay? In this case, of course, we have Charlie and we have my other three plaintiffs, okay? That you know, they're injured because there's a person sitting in the Oval Office who's not a natural-born citizen, and the founding fathers told us that was dangerous for our country. Okay, it was dangerous for our political institutions. It was dangerous for our safety. Not only did Congress, not only did the founding fathers tell us that, but
and
we have
dangerous because he was in charge of the military.
Yeah, he's the chief, the commander-in-chief. You know, he's in charge of our foreign policy. Now, how can you have somebody
who could lead us down a path that we don't have a way of defending ourselves? He could do things and make decisions and treaties that would take our powers away from our military, that we cannot fight man-to-man because we're outnumbered 10 to 1. So he takes away our superior weapons and puts them on the – and what do we see today? He's doing that.
Right.
Unilaterally taking away the nuclear response that
exactly.
has kept us safe for 65 years.
Yeah. Now, that's not injuring Charlie Kirchner. That our defenses are being dismantled, that our military trials are not going forward. We're not prosecuting terrorists. That we're giving away our interrogation techniques. That the
men
CIA
and women
uses.
Who served in the military defended on his overwhelming power to win our wars and not lose millions of American soldiers. Look how many people we'd have lost invading Japan. If we're going to say that because China is a signer of a nuclear treaty, and they somehow are involved in nuking one of our cities, we're not going to hit them back. We're going to fight them with conventional weapons. Can you imagine American military losses going in on a conventional attack on China? I mean, it's you know what I mean? It's unthinkable.
Yes.
The Russians, the same way.
Now, if Obama was a natural-born citizen and that was his foreign policy, there's nothing we could do about it. We have to wait, and
right.
you know. I mean, we could. I mean, of course, we could do it like express ourselves through the First Amendment. We can write, we can argue, we can, you know, picket, and but we got to wait until for the election, okay? If we think
he is exactly the kind of president the founders warned us about, a person born with multiple allegiance, a citizen of the world.
Yeah.
He did not want a citizen of the world as president and commander of the military.
Yeah, so getting back to your question, what is the Corps looking for, okay? I gave the Corps enough. These are our merits. He's not a natural-born citizen. And according to the rules of motion practice on a motion to dismiss, you got to accept as true what the complaint says. So our complaint says that he's not a natural-born citizen and that he never proved that he was born in Hawaii, okay? So if you start with that premise, okay, what? Then Charlie Kirchner and my other three plaintiffs, they're not being injured by a person who's not a legal president?
Of unknown legal identity that's sitting in the office de facto who hasn't proven he's eligible.
Yeah, how could you honestly conclude that Charlie Kirchner, who's a citizen of the United States, okay, and he has even more focus on this than your average citizen. I mean, he's a commander, ex-commander. He's taken an oath to defend the Constitution, defend and protect. He could be recalled. He could be, okay? We're not going by that he could be recalled. You know, he's focused. He's very, very focused on this, and he works night and day, literally, night and day, 7 days a week to get justice on this, okay? So it's not like he's some plaintiff that comes out of the air who's really not going to present the issues for the court because he doesn't really have a stake in it, you know? He's got a stake in this.
Since August 2008.
Yeah.
He's involved.
Yeah, night and day, 7 days a week. Yep.
Writing letters.
Yeah.
Gentlemen.
So
we've got about 8 minutes left in tonight's discussion. There's been a lot of requests in the chat for you to talk about Colonel Lack, and I recognize that that's a sensitive issue for you. Is there anything that you can discuss about that military question?
Charlie, you want to address that? Because you're
yeah, well,
commander,
well,
so you know,
a,
you know.
It, yeah, it, what what's going to be needed there is an expert in the Uniform Code of Military Justice, because he'll be tried in a legal court of law in the military system, a court-martial. And it's going to take a specialist in that area of the law in addition to knowing the civil law too, but he's going to need a lawyer who's really expert on the UCMJ, and there's articles in there that an officer can question unlawful orders and things like that, and I'm not a legal expert in the UCMJ, but there's some interesting articles in the UCMJ that his defense attorney can bring up that he has a duty to question what he thinks is a legal order. Now he will suffer the consequences if he's proven on the wrong side of the court's decision. But he has a right to stand up and question the legalities of any orders. I mean, look at the Nuremberg trials when the German officers didn't stand up and obeyed orders, and they were held accountable for obeying those orders and not questioning them. So he has a right to stand up and question the orders that are coming down from the top because he thinks the commander-in-chief, as I do, is not eligible and not it cannot issue a legal order. So that's what I would caution here is that anybody who wants certain people to get involved to help him has to be sure that person is an expert on military law and the Uniform Code of Military Justice.
I happen to have a personal relationship with someone that would be perfect, but he already does a lot of work for the military, and in this case, you would need someone who is not doing work for the military that is also an expert. Is that correct?
Yes, and you don't want to have a guy that they can get to him some way in behind by hurting his business or whatever. And he's got to be a constitutional lawyer too. He's got to be multifaceted, but particularly expert in military law and court martials and things. And I wish the Lieutenant Colonel much success and luck. And he's really, really. He and I are the same military grade. Commander in the Navy is the same. I'm full commander. It's the same as Lieutenant Colonel in the Army. So he's a senior officer like I am, and he's taking great risk to his career, and he's a true patriot, and I wish him all the luck in the world, and I encourage everybody to support him, and I hope, likewise, that the people that are supporting him will support us, too.
Well, gentlemen, what else would you like to share, you know, approaching this critical time in this case?
Well, I just wanted to come in.
Is there anything the people that are listening that they can do to support this besides going and donating something?
Well, I was going to let Charlie discuss that.
Put your trust in God. I mean, I firmly believe that truth and justice is going to win in the end. I think the Constitution, we're going to beat Obama and his cronies and his mafia from Chicago. And is whoever he is, he's going to be found out and brought to justice. I just hope it's in time before he really ruins the country beyond repair. We'll get through it, I know, but how much damage are we going to take? But let's hope and pray and that justice is done quicker rather than later.
Yeah, and also I want to just add that, you know, with the decision coming up shortly, and hopefully with oral argument, you know, my hope is that more people get more involved. They study the issues, they comment, they get involved publicly, because this is a public issue. You know, this is not some case just going through the court where nobody knows anything about it. I mean, this is, you know, something important for the whole nation.
And at the bottom, it's a legal issue, though. It's a legal question. It has to be answered. What do those three words in our Constitution mean? Right, Mario? It's a legal question.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, it's not, you know, we've heard this thing about political question. It's a legal question, constitutional legal question. What is a natural-born citizen? The court is highly competent to define it. It's within their sphere of power. They're not stepping on the toes of the president, surely, and they're not stepping on the toes of Congress, because Congress doesn't have the power to define a natural-born citizen. The only power they have is to naturalize. And they've, you know, kind of expanded on that. But, you know, it's clearly a judicial decision that needs to be made, and this issue is just not going to go away. I mean, we've had this over and over again in our history, and there was the great article that just came out who was that, Charlie?
Charles Evan Hughes. He ran for election but lost, so the question never got to the courts because he lost. But there's been, and you know, and then but the question is, what about for the future too? If Obama gets away with it, then somebody else will try it. So the legal definition has to be decided. Half the people say natural born is this. The other half say it's this. The court has to decide it.
And you know something? And it's worse now. It's worse now because the issue has become more public now. It's worse.
Well, they're playing the race. They're playing the race card on it. They're playing politics on it.
Yeah.
It's not. It's a legal question. It's a legal question. It has
but
nothing
to
do with race.
The country
or politics.
But the country's divided right now. It's you know, you got certain
right.
people, they
divided.
Feel one thing, and you're not going to ever have these people united unless the court acts. Okay, it's really going to be destructive for our, because now, before nobody even knew, you know, natural born citizen, nobody even cared because nobody ever tried this like Obama did.
It's,
you know?
Right,
but
in
now,
our complaint. We want the Supreme Court to decide what it means and give it to the Congress and say now enforce it. That's right in our case, right in the original complaint. The relief is spelled out. Court, you decide what it means, then the Congress, acting together with the court, can resolve it. It's a simple decision, really. It's just the judges are going to sit in a vacuum and not look at the underlying merits and decide the case and the thing in a vacuum, or are they going to do like Mario said? They're going to read the merits and they're going to say this needs to be decided.
Yeah, and we also
gentlemen, we have less than 2 minutes left, and we have one question from Dr. Kate. And she asked, how can the colonel be sentenced without discovery of the imposter in chief's eligibility?
That's going to be a military court legal decision. I don't think I think they're going to have discovery, but the military courts take things completely different. So, you know, if Mario wants to take a crack at that, he can, but You need a lawyer to answer that who's an expert in military law.
Well, see, I don't want to say anything because I don't want to hurt or I don't want to help. Okay,
right.
I don't want to interfere in that case.
That's right.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean,
understood.
I could have an opinion, but you know, Again, I highly respect, but you're an officer.
You're an officer of the court and highly respected. And you know what? If you go out on the limb and say something, yeah, it could hurt him. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it could hurt him. It could help. Of course, I want to help him. I mean, what I perceive to be helping him, somebody else could latch onto it and use it, against
him.
Gentlemen, we are out of time.
Can we put out the website real quick? www.protectourliberty.org.
www.protectourliberty.org. Thank you very much for coming on tonight, and a great bit of gratitude from Dr. Kate for you guys being such troopers and getting past the technical problems we had tonight. So thanks very much. Tomorrow night, Walls in Our Minds, we've got Steve Patterson coming on to discuss a lot of IRS issues with Red Beckman and Terry Dodd. Same channel as you're on right now. Good night, everybody, and thanks for joining us.
Good night, all.
Hey, 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 hey